Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the Thundercast. On today's show, we are going to be discussing the next generation of video game consoles and what Sony and Microsoft's actions in the past few months tell us about their differing approaches. I'm Matthew Sorry, and joining me today I have Shane Ryan.
Now then.
And Nick Hoff.
Hello.
Talking about the most controversial of the next-gen offerings, Microsoft's Xbox One. So obviously Microsoft have been putting out a lot of mixed messaging recently, and the Xbox One, as we were told when we first heard about it, was going to have an online requirement where you couldn't play the console if you didn't have an internet connection. But Microsoft done a 180 and announced that they are no longer having that restriction. So what do you think about the news that they are removing that restriction?
Firstly, it's unprecedented, I think, for any industry, really, for something like that to happen. Was it the right thing to do? I would have liked them to have kept to what they were doing, because then there would have been a bigger difference between the consoles, whereas now this kind of flattens the landscape, regardless of whether what they're doing could be seen as ethically a bit questionable or not, or whether it is the future and where DRM comes into that, as we'll discuss later on.
Yeah.
But I think now, by removing that, firstly, it shows that there was no real integrity to that decision. And to build a console based upon an idea that was partially worked on by somebody you fired, or, sorry, asked to leave because they openly talked about it on Twitter.
That's talking about... Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were talking about Don Matrick.
No,
then.
Adam Moore.
You're talking about the other guy.
Yeah. I mean, he posted a tweet when they announced this, and he said, "There goes my life's work down the drain," sort of thing. And it was just like, well, you've worked on this. You've obviously pushed for it. You think it's this brilliant idea. But if the company gets rid of you because you're able to talk about it, they push it and push it. And then because of pre-order sales, and remember, pre-order sales don't actually mean anything yet because most of them you don't have to pay for fully. I mean, in the UK, you can pre-order on a lot of websites without putting any money down, so it's not real yet. And within a month of pre-orders, they just completely went back on everything and just scrapped it. And clearly, it wasn't that integral to the machine, and it makes you think, well, what is the real core part of it?
I would say that Microsoft got such a huge amount of negative press following the announcement that they're going to have this internet requirement. And I think that's why they've changed. It's because of the public backlash against that requirement. So it's as you say, it doesn't seem like there's much integrity behind the decision to actually have that requirement in the first place. Maybe it was something they didn't think would have quite the backlash that it did end up having. One thing I would say about the internet requirement as it was, I don't think Microsoft really got the point across about what that would bring to the console, what that would bring to the experience, the reason why you should have that. They really didn't sell me on it, at least. I don't think they sold anyone on it, because they didn't really talk about it that much. But do you think they've lost anything by removing this requirement to have an internet connection?
Noel, nothing changes, because the key kind of point is, before, you had to connect every 24 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's not always connected. Now, if it was always connected, I think I would have been more willing to go along with this concept. Because connecting every 24 hours is half-assed. Because because they always talk about the cloud, which is dedicated servers. So if they're saying you need this, then why do you only need to connect every 24 hours? What would happen to these games if they'd kept all this in place?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go Big Brother, if you're going to go full Orwellian, at least do it properly.
Yeah.
Like, make me suffer. Don't give me, like, a little curfew. Start hitting me with sticks if I do something wrong.
Just announce that the Kinect is going to be the living room pervert.
Exactly, yeah. I just think it's a complete lack of clarity on what Microsoft, the message that they're delivering. They don't seem to know, apart from the fact that they had this, like you say, they had this system, this once per 24 hours. They never explained the benefits adequately, and they didn't explain the conditions adequately at the start. And even now, I think there's a situation where a lot of people don't really understand what Xbox one's position is on all these subjects. I think it's incredible for such a huge company who had such a success with the Xbox 360 to underestimate the interest that people will have. If you say these things, people are going to ask you how exactly they work and why you're doing them. They're not just going to shut up and let you do whatever you want. I mean, ultimately, Xbox were kind of pushed into this position as well by Sony's conference, weren't they? So,
yeah,
yes.
The whole
Sony part is quite interesting because if you read into, I mean, outside of the blogs and I mean, the internet allows everyone to have a voice, which causes loads of misinformation, and through all the daily racket of crap in games press that you have to get through within there. If you dig into the real trusted sites, you kind of get a better
Thunderbolt,
a better kind of picture to the idea that there's this big thing that Sony was on everyone's side and they were leading it.
Yeah.
But the truth is that Microsoft have the money to put this infrastructure in place. They already have Azure. They have all this thing, and I think Sony would do exactly the same if they're not already thinking of doing the same. But we could talk about that probably in the second half of this as we talk about the future of both consoles. But on the Microsoft part, what I want to go back to first is what you said about them not really selling it. And the reason is because they had nothing to sell. There is no positives to their 24-hour connection rule. None.
Well, there isn't any. I think there's one thing that they maybe missed. If you have that requirement, that means that literally everyone who owns your console has an internet connection. So you know that every game you build, you can do something with that online connection. You can build massive, persistent online worlds. I'm not saying you can't without that requirement. You can still do that, but at least you knew that everyone who owned that console had that.
Yeah, but
had that internet connection. That was the only thing that I could really see, and Microsoft didn't really make a point of that, and they didn't sell anyone
on
that.
Well, that's because the next question would have been, well, actually, you're not selling that. What you're selling is that people have an internet connection once every 24 hours, which still isn't enough to develop. Nothing's changed from a developer standpoint. I mean, realistically, you have to connect to the internet, right, when you buy the console day one for it to work. So you need to connect.
So you still have that, I suppose. Yeah.
So you have to have do an update on day one for it to work for the internet. So I don't understand what the difference between that is and what's every 24 hours, really, from a developer's point of view, because if you've got the internet or you've not. And so if it's only one that's every 24 hours, I don't understand what changes from a developer's perspective.
It also, the thing about having to sign in to register is almost like being on parole.
Isn't it? It's electronic parole.
If you said you had to be online, the console had to be online, that maybe would be one thing that you could sell, but I think it's the idea that that makes you sound like a criminal if you own the console. That you have to every 24 hours, you have to submit your paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let Xbox know that you're still there. I mean, the whole thing seems to be designed with the idea that everyone is a criminal and that we have to restrict these people.
I think it would have been more interesting if they had a feature where the Xbox One just didn't work within the vicinity of a Sony console.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That would be good.
That would be strange.
Some sort of artificial intelligence within the system. It starts to think for itself and get sulky.
It starts crying at night, at midnight. Sobbing gently.
So what about... Yeah. So let's carry on with kind of what Microsoft were doing. What do... Do we think their original kind of point of view, although it was a mess, and so let's just go along with it at the point of where they were going. Do we think that the next generation of consoles are pretty much going to be what the Xbox One tried to be this time? Like not this generation that's going to happen this year.
Oh, you're talking about the one
PlayStation 5, for example.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that everything will pretty much move to a digital future. So everything will be online. And you will download pretty much all of your games. Do you think the next generation won't be disc based?
Well, I mean, when the PS3 came out, Sony said earlier on that the idea for the future console would be that there'd be no disc drive for the fourth one. But obviously things haven't moved that far ahead. I mean, and if you look back at the PS3, the size of the hard drive in the PS3 compared to the 360 hard drives shows you that Sony was actually being more forward-thinking then about the amount of digital content that people would have. It's just that Sony don't have the money to put the infrastructure in place that Microsoft has.
Yeah. I mean, I think when Sony said that back when they were releasing PS3, I think they were maybe a bit too optimistic about how internet infrastructure would develop over the lifespan of the PS3. I don't think it's developed to the point where you can have a diskless console. I think that's the reason why we don't have them at the moment. But I think we'd probably be talking about anywhere between 6 and 8, 9 years down the line for next consoles, if there is such a thing when it comes to that. Yeah, I imagine that they will be only online. Yeah, and you won't have discs. Don't hold me to that when it comes to it, but I think I would predict that.
I mean, what the Xbox One originally was going to be was essentially a diskless drive for gaming anyway, because you would have your game, but you put it in, install it, take the disc out, and never use it again. And you basically turn it into a digital copy that's locked onto the machine.
Yes, yeah.
I don't think people mind going digital. It's just whether it's how the company uses it. I mean, Steam is essentially, you know, DRM, really. I mean, you can't trade games on that. But there's benefits that make up for it. And I think consoles will have to make some kind of sacrifices in order to move into that digital-only business structure, which they don't seem to be willing to do at the moment. They want to be able to sell these games and offer these services on their terms, so you get, you know, Call of Duty still being $60 on the marketplace.
It's a very strange thing, isn't it? I mean, the reason I like Steam is mainly because of the summer sales, things like the sales that you have. You know, you can get games for ridiculously cheap prices over a short time period.
That you will never play.
Yeah, exactly. And also, PlayStation Plus on PlayStation Network. The reason that I like that as a service is because you get tons of free games. You get lots of great content there that's free. So they have incentives, and that's something that I don't really have at the moment with Xbox Live Gold. I know they've just started their Games for Gold initiative, but that's weak sauce compared to PlayStation Plus.
And a little bit late in the last year of its... maybe not last year, but, you know, at the end of its lifespan, console.
Yeah,
lifespan.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it seems to be ending as well when the Xbox One comes out, so it's the wording they've used is that it's not even a permanent thing.
God, it's just a temporary incentive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think really, if you're going to try and push for some digital future, you really need to have an incentive there. And that those two services that I've talked about, Steam and PlayStation Plus, though the incentives for those are really clear. You get lots of great content, cheap prices, or free.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see anything like that from Microsoft when they're talking about Xbox One and what their philosophy behind Xbox One is going to be.
I think
what's
happened is people at Microsoft, a section of people at Microsoft that are working on this from the games perspective, not the development of the actual games, but from the kind of the concept and the services, looked at Steam and thought, what do they do? Right, let's put it down on a whiteboard. We've got this box, we've got this. Right, this is great. Let's try and look at how we can mimic this and push it and make it more convenient. What they haven't done is... It's you get a lot of hyperbole of people saying, you know, Microsoft don't know what they're doing with this. This is kind of pathetic. But everything they do kind of rings true to that, because from a purely like business level of developing something at the beginning of having a project, is you're going to look at like, right, well, what happened when we did this last time? So what happened when Valve did Steam? Everyone hated their guts because you couldn't play Half-Life 2 without an internet connection.
They were the devil.
Everyone hated them, and it took them years to get people round to the idea of digital content. So, but Microsoft are like, no, we haven't got time for getting people's trust over years. We need to get day one. It's a console. Let's just run in and go, right, we've got all this, let's go. And then you go, well, you can have sales. Well, don't ask us that. Just buy the console first, and then we'll discuss it two years down the line.
Yeah,
even now it's just like, well, what's happening with this? Well, the console's not out yet. You know, we've got some great games. We'll look at that in the future. Well, no, because if you're spending £500 on something, I'd like to know what it does. Not, oh, do you want to buy this car? Yeah, what's it like? Well, buy it, and then you can see.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also an interesting point to be made about the future of the product you buy, because they were essentially changing the game ownership model to a rental model instead of an actual ownership model. So any game that you purchase digitally would be rented, really, because at any point they could take away your right to have that game.
Yeah.
Which is
So, like, what if you want to go, like, any of your old consoles that you've got lying around your house right now, you know you can go back to them, your Sega Saturn, your NES, you can go back to it, you can plug it in and still play it these days.
Yeah.
But the thought of that changing is a bit of a strange one. Does it bother either of you guys?
It's trust, isn't it? Because it's the same on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In theory, they could turn around and say, you've broken the, you know, the user agreement rules, you have lost all your content, goodbye.
Mm. I think it is we're fickle people, aren't we? I mean, with Steam, we know that maybe we're not 100%, we don't have 100% ownership of those things, but we kind of accept that because either, like, it's easy to get hold of them or they're cheaper or whatever. We are willing to kind of, you know, with ebooks and stuff like that, you know that the rules about how you own them and what rights you have over them are dodgy. But if someone offers it to you conveniently and cheaply, then you'll kind of go along with it. So, I mean, yeah, it does bother me, and I think those questions are going to be asked increasingly in the future. But, you know, I'm a sucker, so... As long as it's cheap, I'll probably buy it.
Yeah, I mean, the consumer rules, purchasing rules between physical and digital media in any format or for any sort of entertainment source is the same. It's just in electronic digital format can be enforced.
Yeah.
Whereas get a company trying to stop somebody doing what they want with a CD is quite difficult because you can't just keep tracking them down, but it allows those rules that have been sat there for the past 20 years to do a copyright and resale and who actually owns what come into play.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Okay, so another point of note with all the Microsoft changes recently to do with the Xbox One, I believe they've now removed the ability to be able to share your games with up to 10 family members. Is that correct?
That's
I've been reading Microsoft's information pages about the Xbox One, and I am more confused than I am informed.
I think there's a dungeon somewhere in America. You have to fight the guardian of the secrets, and then you get access to what the Xbox One actually does.
One secret at a time.
Yeah.
You have to replay it. It's like Ghouls and Ghosts. You have to go back to the beginning. That family sharing thing didn't exist.
Right.
It's a myth that was pushed by people that got overexcited. People that have brand loyalty pushed that because they read into something Microsoft said and went berserk with it, but they never said it. It never existed.
Well, I'm so confused because I've got to say my original thoughts on this were, or my beliefs on this were that you could, right, what I initially heard was that you would be able to share your games with up to 10 family members, and then everyone was questioning about how you defined a family member, would you be able to share them with friends? Mm-hmm. And then I heard that you would be able to share your games, not the full game, but a demo of the game or the introduction of the game with up to 10 family members. And now I hear that it's completely false, and maybe it's been removed, or maybe it wasn't there to begin with.
I don't think it was even there. I think the concept that... Now, what I kind of tied it into was that originally they said you could have a one gold account per family household. So you'd have one gold account with a main account holder, and under that you could have 10 accounts linked to it that wouldn't have to pay gold, but would get the services.
See, now that's interesting, because at the moment you have to have a gold account per profile, don't you? And that's something that Microsoft really should be singing from the rooftops. That's an improvement over their current generation.
They haven't actually written that down, they've just said it.
All right. Okay.
Because, and this is another thing Microsoft now, is
that
Sony can say something and everyone will believe it. Microsoft say it and everyone's like, well, until I see it on writing on your website, I will not believe a word you're going to say.
Because, and even then, it might change.
Shane, I've got to tell you, don't even believe the writing on the website, because they've still got a page up that talks about their 24-hour online verification.
Well, they need that because in the new rules, the main part of small print is this is all subject to change for the new change. So they might just delete the new page and revert back to the old one a couple of years' time.
This is true. It's just such mixed messaging, and I don't really know what's going on with the Xbox One at the moment.
So the family when a console was just like a square grey thing? You just put it in the colour of the room.
Would have just been... Now, they've come around and said it's a demo thing, but that doesn't even make any sense, because when they even half talked about it, they were talking about how, you know, you could be playing a game and then your son or your cousin or something at college could play Halo for a bit, but... Then do you really think publishers are going to go, yeah, all right, one person, one copy per 10 people, single-player games, they're going to do well?
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't even make sense from a really basic standpoint. So getting excited about something that's just ludicrous and wasn't going to work, it might have been, and then it comes around that basically it might have been that those people on that gold account, so the 10 people under that main gold account, wherever they are, could log in and play for an hour, and that's why it had that 1 hour check if you were playing on a secondary console.
It's just such a mess.
And then it would come up saying, do you want to pay £50 for the digital copy of Halo 5 that's been out for 7 years?
For a character.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've got to say, yeah, wrapping this up, it's just so confusing what's going on. Sorry, yeah. Nick.
Clarity of message. That's what we're asking. If you're going to be... If you're going to be evil, just lay it out. Tell us what you're going to do.
laugh on stage on the way out.
Yeah, that's fine.
Maniacal laugh. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's interesting what's happened. I am still confused about exactly what's going on with the Xbox One.
I'm sure there'll be more developments in the next few months.
Yeah, yes. Run up to launch. I'm sure it will all become crystal clear at some point in 2016.
What's worth pointing out as well, it's important to remember that for the general public, is they don't even know any of this has happened. So yeah. for 80 to 90% of people that are going to buy the console have no idea this U-turn's even happened.
Those people without an internet connection that get the Xbox One never knew that once it might not have worked in their house.
Well, it won't work now because they will be able to do the day one update.
Oh yeah, shit, that's true. God, I'm so confused. Okay, any more thoughts on the Xbox One?
From a concept side, I mean, they have said that they're really excited about the possibilities for advertising.
Oh, so I am.
That's exciting.
That is just fabulous. Pre-order me right up.
There's a within the gaming community. There's some unfortunate things, and one of those is the belief that if you see an advertisement and it doesn't offend you, it is therefore no longer an advertisement. And the people forget this concept that if when you go onto Xbox Live dashboard and there's loads of games on there, just because they're games, they are still advertisements. And just because you might want to buy it doesn't make it any less of an advertisement. You know, it's still the same thing. And what you'll see more and more of is this kind of focus pushed, which they started testing the current Xbox, of what you buy, the sort of things you do, and your habits. They'll data mine and then try and sell things to you in a very subversive way. I mean, people are already at the moment like, well, I'm not bothered by it because, you know, it's not advertising because it's games I might want. Well, no, it still is. Because it's trying to make you buy things that really you wouldn't have bought otherwise. I mean, Steam does it as well, just not to the data mining extent. It's just the way they offer it. But we'll see a lot of that, especially if you connect as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We're going to see them pushing games on the dashboard, on the very front page of the dashboard. They even talked about it at E3, I'm sure. They talked about how they're gonna look at what you play and then push things towards you.
Yep.
Okay, so that was the Xbox One. We'll be back after a short break with a discussion about Sony and their console and how everything matches up. Alright guys, so we have talked quite a lot about the Xbox One and Microsoft's ideas and philosophies behind the console. So let's move over to Sony's console a little bit and talk about the PlayStation 4. Now, I think it's fair to say that the PlayStation 4 has generally been seen in the wake of all of Microsoft's mixed messaging and talk of online requirements. PlayStation 4 and Sony, with their talk of not having an online requirement and being a very video games focused console, they've been seen as the white chivalrous knight of the video games industry, and that they're putting out a video game console first and foremost. So what do you think of Sony's messaging so far?
Nick, do you want to go first?
I think it's always dangerous just believing that Sony are some kind of altruistic benefactors who are only interested in gamers and mm-hmm. and making the best possible console for us without worrying about financial concerns.
Yeah.
But I think as well, there's a lot more, well, for one, clarity, which we've talked about with Microsoft's various statements and quotes and various things that Sony seem a lot more sort of clear about what they are doing and how they're doing it. And I think there's also a sense that despite the fact that they obviously they are a big company and they are obviously out for money, as all these companies are, there is a slight sort of acceptance that they can't just do what they want, that they have to sort of make some allowances for what people are saying to them, that they're going to sort of, you know, accept what people are saying to them and, you know, go along with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think Sony definitely, we're seeing Sony take advantage of what Microsoft has done and the mess that they know Microsoft has got into. I mean, we saw Jack Trenton come out on stage at E3 and really make a point of their price point and really make a point of the fact that they don't have this online internet requirement.
Yeah, it made PR look fun for half an hour.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And we've talked about this on a previous podcast, but it was interesting to see the reaction in the auditorium at E3. People were whooping and cheering. And it's a strange thing. The whole console war and the concept of the console war in the first place is a very strange thing. And brand loyalty and consumer loyalty to a certain company is a very strange thing as well.
Especially from what's considered to be a journalism exposition only. So to get people to do that is a bit like,
Should you not be slightly impartial journalists?
Mm.
But it's... Sony are there to make money, but I would definitely say, aside from the whole strange relationship consumers have with these companies, I would definitely say that they very much seem to be... They very much seem to be interested in making a good console for video games to be made on and video games to be played on. More so than Microsoft. And I think that tells in their messaging. You saw all those indie developers that you had at E3 come up on stage and talk about their games. And I've watched a lot of talks by Mark Cerny recently, the lead architect on the PlayStation 4, talking about how he went to developers to begin with and asked them for feedback about what they would like in a next-generation console, what would make it easier for them to develop for. And they're talking about their independent games, they're talking about how easy it is to develop for the console. It all seems like they want to make money, but the way that they're going to go about doing that is by making a great product. Microsoft seems to, of course, want to make money as well, but the way that they're going to go about doing that is by assuming that they have the brand loyalty in the first place and forcing things upon the consumer.
Yeah, I think there's definitely Microsoft is services. Everything's service-based, and it's behind the paywall. I think when we look back to the initial PlayStation 4 reveal in February, they used four words, I think, and I can't recall what they are right now, but I'm sure one of them was simple. And I think that's really important. And the philosophy behind this whole console is simple. Everything's got to be simple. You know, using the control, even when they've been talking about the controller and how they reshaped it because they realised that younger people were struggling to use the triggers. And then they thought, well, how about our first-party games for kids won't use the triggers all the time, and going back to using X for jump and stuff like that. And I think the simplicity is showing in everything they do.
Yeah.
There's a financial gamble with that, which is that Sony are going for the, we'll do what we've done before, but bigger, whereas Microsoft are thinking, can the game industry continue to kind of consume itself.
Give us the numbers that we want.
Exactly. I mean, the past 2 years, it's just been AAA title doesn't hit numbers, doesn't hit numbers, doesn't hit numbers, doesn't hit numbers. And it's like, all right, well, ramp up development costs and give us 5 more years of that. And it's like, well...
does it really work?
Yeah, it's just like, throw more money at it, it'll be fine. So what we'll probably see, in fact, it's not even probably EA, I mean, I think they've got a third or maybe a quarter of the AAA games... The number of AAA games they're working on now. So what's happening is the big companies are all narrowing down on less games, but big franchises, yearly updates, playing it safe. There's less risk, but we'll see it coming through on the indie level. And what's important for Sony is that, yes, you can play all these games, indie games on your PC, probably cheaper and probably with better overall support just because of the infrastructure, the way it's made. However, for Sony, if they get these people through, then it can create brand loyalty for the developers. And as those developers work up the ranks and we see indie games become mid-tier games that start selling for $20 to $30, you know, start using... We've already seen it, that are using... I mean, most of the games that are using Unreal Engine 4, a lot of them seem to be indie games that have embraced it early on. like, especially a couple of survival horror ones coming out, like Outlast, which looks great. And I think we'll see people... what they're doing is they're trying to go back to that kind of PlayStation 1 thing of getting a couple of these developers on board and making them loyal and eventually end up with a Naughty Dog, you know, like for the next generation of consoles.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I think we've seen that towards the tail end of the PlayStation 3 with Sony. We see them signing deals with companies like that game company. Three game deals for, as we saw, Flow, Flower and Journey. And then we see that also, I think, it's not the Chinese Room. The guys who made Unfinished Swan,
mm-hmm.
they did the same thing with them. And I'd like to see them do more of that. And I think they will do more of that in the future with the PlayStation 4.
I definitely agree. I think we're going to see a lot more of that, which is great from a gamer's perspective. As I've mentioned, financially it's a bit of a concern because it depends how much you get sales-wise on those and how that works, because a lot of them, remember, none of those are box copies, so you don't get store, so you're relying a lot on third-party publishers. But what Sony do have, and what's worked really well for them, and you kind of touched on before, is first-party support. I mean, if you look at what's happening now, The Last of Us has just come out, to glorious widespread, you know, acclaim, and they've still got Beyond Two Souls to come out next month.
Yeah,
and this is at the end of like a 6-7 year, you know, generational window. I think they've just announced a new Ratchet and Clank game for it.
I believe so.
They've just announced a brand new game for the PS3.
PS3.
Well, Sony are typically. They're typically pretty good at carrying, you know, supporting the older consoles in the transition, aren't they? I mean,
mm-hmm.
With the PS2, they did the same thing. They carried on announcing titles and creating games for that, even when games were coming out on the PS3.
Mm. And that makes sense as well, yeah. Because they have such an install base on those consoles.
Exactly, yeah. Which is also for people who can't afford to make the switch over, there doesn't seem to be much of a consideration from them, from Microsoft, whereas with Sony, it's like, there's a nod to those as well, I think, that they are sort of carrying on with the PS3 and continuing to support it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be interesting if we do see... I know we haven't seen them so far. Microsoft don't seem like they are going to continue supporting the Xbox 360.
Mm.
And they didn't really so much with the original Xbox either.
Well, they dropped that really quick, didn't they?
Yeah.
But that's because of how much it was costing to run. I think the background infrastructure for the 360 would be there, but I mean, there's been no real first party support. They killed pretty much first party support for the past 2 years and just banked on Halo.
You get the sense.
Sorry, Nick.
I was just going to say, you get the sense with Microsoft that they see those consoles as a kind of, as like, you know, like the new iPad or something that they expect everyone to have to be able to buy the latest copy, and then that's all you need. You can forget about the older ones.
Like, yeah,
they'll just move on to the next big thing, whereas Sony seem to understand that transition doesn't have to be so instantaneous. You can lead into it and you can continue to support those consoles and make money from it.
I think
one thing I think will be interesting to see is whether we've seen Microsoft announce a lot of new IPs for the Xbox One for the launch window time. We've got Rise, Sunset Overdrive, things like that, Titanfall.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they continue doing that throughout the life cycle.
Definitely.
Or that's just a launch thing, and then they're going to hone down which franchises really take off. Maybe Titanfall really takes off, and that'll be the next Gears of War for the next generation.
I mean, what we've seen of the IPs, for me, is Microsoft has much better games that they've announced so far. However, historically, not even in consoles, just in life, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Nothing really changes, everything's in cycles. And what we'll see is Microsoft will do the same thing. They're going to come out with all these great games early on. Sony will start a bit slower, but Microsoft will just suddenly just veer right off. Like 2 years in, you know, that'll be it, done. There'll be little bits and pieces here. They'll try and bank on Halo becoming the biggest thing in the world with this TV series and everything. And they'll just let everything else just carry on. And whenever, we'll do a little sequel here and there. You know, Remedy, who are doing that
Quantum Dream. I
want
to say Quantum Dream, but that's the developers.
They'll probably do a bit of DLC, and then that'll probably be them for the generation while they work on something else. And I just don't. if you look what's happened now, at the beginning, Microsoft came out really strong with the 360. They got a load of developers in, a load of first party titles. They were running really strong. Everyone's like, wow, you know, this is like their second console. They are doing great. And then, if I think about my Xbox, they're not doing anything games-wise. you know, it's been like a massive entertainment push for the past 2-3 years, and now I just use it to stream Love Film on. And I don't stream Love Film on it because I wanted to buy the box to do it. It's just that there's nothing else appealing me to do it. So when they're looking at the stats of, oh, you know, Shane Ryan, he's watching Love Film and Netflix loads instead of buying games. Let's do loads of services for him for the next console. I don't want a console for that. It's just because I'm doing that now doesn't warrant it. You know, I'm not going to go out and buy it. And I want to play, you know, D4, and I want to play Below, and this the Quantum game, and even Killer Instinct looks like it's going to be fun, and Forza is going to be great. And these, but these are going to be like earlier, like year one titles, and then after that, my concern is it will just do exactly what they've done before. They'll go, we've got our install base, we've got our franchises, that's just services.
You can definitely see that with Titanfall, the way that they're pushing that as like the big new IP. And you get the sense that they're putting all their eggs kind of in one basket with that and hoping that it's going to be the next.
But it's on PC as well.
Yeah.
I can say it's not completely exclusive.
Yeah, and there's rumours that it might come out on PS4 because contractually it seems a bit wafer thin about what's actually exclusive. I mean, the EA is never going to say what's in the contract because, you know, of NDA and everything.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely at least timed. But then again, they're talking about all this cloud stuff, and but then it's on the PC, so it's just dedicated servers. I mean, I'm sure in Unreal Tournament back when it used to be great, they used to run bots off the servers back then. So there's no.
This is true.
Exactly the same. So I think Titanfall would be great. But when I just think about it, when I stop being excited and I just calm down and go, think about what, Shane, do you need an Xbox? Titanfall looks great, yeah, but you've got a PC. So it's probably going to be supported better on that. And I can scale it how I want. And I just think, well, I might as well just, I'm not going to buy a new console for something I can already play. I mean, that is applicable to Sony and the indies because I've played most of the games, or will be able to play most of the games.
On my PC through
Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you come back to that like £100 price gap between the two, and you think that, you know, they're charging almost a PC price, low end PC price.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think us three are in
quite
a fortunate position where we have pretty decent PCs, quite modern PCs that we can play lots of these new games, quite high end visual fidelity on PCs.
Mm.
If I didn't have a PC, then I would definitely be looking at these next-gen consoles and going, right, which one do I really want? Which one is going to be the best over the life cycle?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they'll outlast my PC because they're optimized better. And then when you buy a game on a console, it has to work. Whereas on a PC, there's so many options that they can't always promise you as your stuff updates.
I'd definitely say I'm in that same situation where I'm thinking, right, well, I can play half of these games on my PC already, and they won't be any better on the console, so what's the real incentive here?
I mean, what I want to ask is something I've been thinking about for the past few weeks, and it's exactly what you've just said, is the closer I get to launch, since February, the kind of hype started of Next Generation, and I thought, you know what, I could buy into this, I'm getting a bit excited about it, but the past few weeks I've been thinking, if I actually write this down on paper and be sensible about it, why would I actually want either of these consoles at launch? Other than being there on day one, which is great, and it's part of the thrill. It's like queuing up outside a cinema, you know, for like the first showing of a film. There's that big buzz about being part of that day one community, even though you don't even see or know these people. But there's this kind of weird excitement that happens. But then, outside of that, what is there? Really, when we've already got consoles and PCs.
What objectively of substance is there on these consoles?
There's a couple of things.
One word, Shane. Nah.
I'd say that...
I want to play that, though.
There are things that the PC about the PC that aren't always great. Like some games you won't be able to play because for some arbitrary reason that your drivers won't work or
driver issues.
Yeah. I mean, it is nice to have something where you can sit down and say, right, everything will work on this for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to worry about... you know, upgrading it or it breaking. Well, actually, what am I talking about? That happens all the time. But, you know, graphics cards upgrades or whatever. That is the thing. And also,
there's a higher level of investment for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of exclusives and things, whether those will, you know, we'll start to see games appearing on PC a bit more that But
it always seems to be the cycle where we get a new console. Oh my god, PC gaming is dead. Look at all these exclusives on the new console. And then come the end of the life cycle, PCs are obviously more powerful. PCs are coming back. There's a weird cyclical thing there going on where PCs always seem to go down in terms of
gameplay. Well, I think that's going to happen less now. Well, at least that kind of logic, because of the third-party publishers are essentially carrying the launch of both consoles. People are going, oh yeah, I want to get a PS4 and stuff because of Watch Dogs. Well, it's on current-gen consoles. Now, they can't, you know, take away main gameplay elements, so it's going to play the same. It's just one of them's going to have better water. And really, it's still the same story. It's still the same game. You're still going to be able to kick people the same, shoot people in the head the same. The animations, if they had to gimp or take away animations on, like, the current-gen consoles, it wouldn't look right. It looks stupid. And it probably could take more work. So all they're doing is basically building on a PC, low-quality graphics, right, that's your current-gen one. You know, everything on full, that's your new-gen. But is it...
Yeah.
So really, even buying a new console is almost like buying a new PC, because really you're only buying it for scaling on day one.
You're buying it for the graphical upgrade. Yeah,
that's it, because everything else is pretty much... All the main games, Battlefield 4... I mean, both of them. That's running 60 frames per second on current gen.
Is Battlefield 4 going to have as many players online as current generation and next generation?
So there's going to be smaller maps. So that is a difference.
I think there's going to be some online differences. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's where you might see the difference, because increased processing power, they can the next gen consoles can handle more things. I think you might get, I don't know, higher body counts in online games and things like that.
I think
so. It just becomes a clusterfuck when it's like 64 versus 64. I mean, you can't do anything.
For the day one, I mean, Sony are right that day one and the original install base of the console is what's considered the enthusiast core gamer, the core person that follows it a lot, you know, reads about stuff online. And I think a lot of those people, because this generation has gone on too long, and it has gone on too long, a lot of those people have now moved on to PC gaming to see what it's all about. And I think, if you look at it's like Steam sales, whenever people get stats, it's always going on the up. And the past few years, it's, you know, it's rocketed. Yeah. And I think a lot of people have moved over. And I've said before, the past like two E3s, they've been showing next-gen graphics running on PCs already. And I really do have this feeling that day one's going to happen, and then day two, everyone's going to go, yeah, everything's quite the same, really, isn't it? It's shinier.
I might go and get a Wii U, actually.
Well, they won't do that.
Should we have a 30-second segment on Wii U now?
Yeah, should we do Wii U?
The future of Wii U.
The philosophy going to happen? Of Wii U.
The philosophy behind Wii U is Nintendo went, oh, we release console and our Nintendo fans will buy that console and we'll make some money.
No, I'm bored of it now.
Just forget about everything else.
Yeah, we're bored of that console now. We're going to do a new one. This one's like a triangle. It's brilliant.
What about this? Let's go back to like the idea of the touchpad. Because this is going to play into, we could discuss how it's going to work with Xbox One and PS4. But Nintendo put it into the core machine, and I would like to think, I'd like to get you guys' opinion on why you think they did that, because Nintendo are really good with controllers, and they're usually the ones that do things first before other people, and then get copied. Mm. But why? Which has happened now, because you know Microsoft and Sony are both using it, but they've realised you don't put it in the machine; you put it as optional. So why did Nintendo
not that good.
Put that screen in and think it was going to be enough?
Right, I'll tell you why. They released the Wii with this new Wiimote. And it really took off with the casual audience, became a big thing. When they thought about their next-gen console, they thought about what they could do to entice people to have a new thing. The Wii kind of became an event. Everyone knew about the Wii. Everyone knew what the Wii was. My grandma knew what the Wii was. She played Wii bowling at Christmas. They thought they need something. They can't just put out a more powerful Wii, because that's not different.
Why?
Why?
Because it's got to be different, Shane.
Why? Because it's got to be different. No, I'm just talking from Nintendo's point of view. I don't think it has to be myself.
No, but why do you think they thought that?
Because of what they ended up putting out.
Because it worked last time.
I don't know. I know that's what they put out, but why? Because Sony, and Microsoft have turned around and gone, we'll do the same but more powerful. That's what every generation generally is.
I think Nintendo thought, right, this is our philosophy. Our philosophy now is to do something different with our next console. What has nobody done? Nobody's put out a touchpad controller yet. I think the difference between the Wii and the Wii U, the Wii, Nintendo had a new idea. It was something different, something we'd never seen before, and that took off. With the Wii U, we've had touchpads in our households for such a long time now, Apple products and Android products. It's not something new, and also they haven't found a reason for it. They haven't found a really interesting gameplay experience that is different. Arguably, they didn't so much with the Wii either, but I think the difference is that the Wii U, the tablet, we were already accustomed to tablets. It's not something new, it's not something different. It's not a talking point for the casual video game consumer.
So let's think about if they made Wii 2.
And Edible,
they,
okay.
And they basically went...
Do you mean Wii U 2?
No, not Wii U 2.
Wii 2, sorry.
So they got the motion controls, and they've continued to work on them in the way that Microsoft has with the Kinect, and made it and did that level of improvement on motion controls, and they brought it out with Wii Sports 2, and they advertised it right. I don't understand how that wouldn't work compared to what they've done now, and how it wouldn't be better.
I think it would have worked. I think it would have.
I think it certainly would have worked better than Wii U.
Nintendo thought they needed to do something different again. Because I think they thought that the reason the Wii was a success was because it was something different. It was. It was something different, and it was new different to video games. The Wii U is all different, if you get what I'm saying.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's different
to video
games. I understand
what you mean. But
we're already accustomed to touchscreens.
Open up that kind of train of thought. I was just thinking, what was this madness about this touchscreen? And now there's going to be people listening to this going, no, you know, it's great because you can do stuff on, you know, Zombie U that you couldn't do otherwise. Well, it's not entirely true because you can only look at one screen at once. I mean, it's cool. It's kind of like that's all right.
Yeah.
But that's not enough to carry. And then Ubisoft have come out and said that, financially, Zombie U was a...
Disaster.
And that's why they've not done any further. That's why Rayman... They've openly said that's why Rayman went multi-platform and got delayed because that underperformed. Sales-wise, so much, and considering
and
how much that was advertised,
EA are taking their franchises off the console as well.
Yeah, slowly drowning, and no one's got a life jacket.
But I think it will do well enough to tie Nintendo over. I mean, Nintendo are rich enough that they can have two unsuccessful consoles and still survive.
Nintendo don't care. They can put the bloody villager from Animal Crossing in Super Smash Brothers now. They're just taking the piss. They don't care anymore.
There is
another six Marios next year.
I don't really understand what wavelength Nintendo is on.
They don't seem to mind if they fuck up.
I do like that part of them. That kind of mentality. Everyone's going,
ignore what everyone else is doing.
Your console is fucked, you are doomed. Oh, it's crazy. Who gives a shit?
It is brilliant.
She's in Super Smash Brothers.
I agree that if we talk about the Nintendo conference where everyone else was doing like shooters and brawlers and all that, and then Nintendo's was just like an hour and 40 minutes of children's television, and there was something brilliant about it.
There is an audience for that.
No,
there
I think it's brilliant.
I love it. I just won't buy the console because it's the new games are showing look. Like they're bored
boring.
Of them. That's the thing. Like the new, there's a new Mario Kart, and it would be great, but it doesn't look like they're doing it enough. It just looks like they've gone. Well, we're not making F-Zero anymore, so if we just take out into that, bung that in, and that's what I mean by boring. It's like there's something missing. Maybe I'm just getting old.
It's weird. Their sort of outlook on games is like, we'll just do the same thing over and over again, and then they come up with something like the Wii U, like. Which is meant, which is a strange, strange idea. I don't understand.
I mean, I know, right, this is one thing. I know we say that Nintendo do the same thing over and over again, and largely they do, all right? They put out the same franchises, but sometimes within those games that they put out in those franchises, they'll do something new. Like Super Mario Galaxy, that was something new to the platform in genre, and that was incredible.
Yeah.
Zelda changes a lot every time, even if people don't... realize it
I know,
does.
Yeah, Zelda's surface level, no, it's aesthetically it's quite similar. You're still playing a guy in a green tunic, but it's.
If you look like
you could turn into a wolf this time though, which is mental.
That wasn't much of a joke. But with Skyward Sword, the actual motion controls in that game were really good, and they were very different to anything I'd.
And to be fair, when Wind Waker came up, that was really strange and unique, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, it was amazing.
I loved that game until you got in the boat and then it was shit.
Yeah.
that was a nosedive of a game.
No, I know I'm in the minority here, but I really love the sailing in Wind Waker.
Oh, it drove me
how
up
long
the wall.
It took. I liked how it just gave it a sense of scale.
It did. No, that was good.
I could drive around in Deadly Premonition for hours on end and not get bored, but in that, on the boat and I was just like, no! I've got stuck in a whirlwind, I've got to do this again.
1 minute of car in Deadly Premonition with the repeating sound.
I don't even want, it's not that I want, be able to teleport or just like quickly skip. I like the sailing, but it was just so laborious. It was just
playing
like,
the flute to change the wind every 5 seconds.
Yeah, the pacing just was eliminated.
So, coming back to like Nintendo and the Wii U, like I think if they had games, if they had, I don't even care if they're Mario, Zelda, Animal Crossing, whatever. If they have games that they take the core franchises and they show them doing something different on the Wii U, it would be amazing. But what have you got? You've got Pikmin coming out and you can look at the map on your controller. That's great. We've got Mario Kart coming out. I can guarantee you right now that has a map on the controller.
No, it's the horn at the moment.
Oh, is it? Brilliant. The horn?
No,
even more,
that's good.
Superfluous integration.
I like that.
Touchpad.
Yeah. It's like they've invented this thing that theoretically could be cool, but no one knows what to do with it.
They don't know what to do with it. And Nintendo are even leading their way with their first-party software, showing you what you can do with it.
Now, the actual design of their previous controllers has always been very clever. And they've always based it around what the human hands can do and what's comfortable. And now, even the N64 controller was absolutely ludicrous, but when you played GoldenEye on it, it worked. You know, and that was a huge game, even though you probably use that controller now and it feels horrible. But now, we look at this and it's like, well, at what point were they thinking, oh, I know, we'll put this touchpad in the middle where during the game you have to take your fingers away from the main buttons of control to press something that you could just do by pressing a button. And I don't know what they were thinking with that.
They weren't thinking about that.
It's such a
shame. They were thinking about what can we do that's different. And they didn't have any ideas, so they took one that already exists.
And they don't have... I mean, I adored the GameCube. I spent hours and hours and hours and hours of that at university playing, you know, Resident Evil Remake, which is incredible. Yeah. I mean, Metroid Prime was so good, the bit when you're travelling through and you open up the door and you finally see, like, the ice part of the world.
There's
great memories of these games, but there doesn't seem to be that class of game on this console.
I would agree.
Yeah, it always seemed like they were known for their like standout games, and now they don't really have them anymore. There hasn't been.
Well, I would say if you look to the 3DS, they still have some
3DS
games going on. 3DS
is really great.
A lot of people rave about that. I'd love to get one of those, but I just don't have the time. I wouldn't have the time for a handheld on top of everything else.
No,
buying it.
No,
but stuff like Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing and all sorts. In fact, the bigger Nintendo and best games seem to be coming out on the 3DS. Yeah, definitely look at the buzz about
it. People were slightly sniffy about the 3DS when it was, you know, around the launch time. But the way they've supported it and the games and bringing out slightly more obscure Japanese RPGs and releasing them in Europe, which is something that Nintendo have had a bit of a spotty history with before, that they haven't done that as much or as well.
Yeah.
That is a success story. It's just a shame they can't do that with an actual console. A home console, which would be nice.
I wonder what they'll do next.
Edible
console. Well, we'll see. Yeah. Oh, you mean next console?
Yeah, because theirs is going to be before everyone else's.
Oh, God. I'm trying to think about what else is popular these
they'll
days.
Still, but, I mean,
I don't know,
they
some
still
kind of reality TV show based console.
Zombies. It'll be a zombie console.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and I'll have to work on it. I can't think of what it would do now, but... Yeah.
I mean, you've got to remember that they still make money, Nintendo. I mean, compared to Microsoft and Sony, that Nintendo make more on their consoles, kind of. They kind of end up in the plus because of they always design the machines and sell them in the way that makes them profit. So it's not that with this console, they're going to be huge minuses like Sony and Microsoft would. If the PS4 or the Xbox One flops, that's it. They put such a high stake in those consoles. I mean, look what happened to Sega with the mistakes they made. But with Nintendo, they still have that safety net. Now, maybe that causes them to be a bit too, like we were joking about before, being relaxed about everything. And just saying, hey, you know, this character's in this game. That's a bit funny, isn't it? When everyone's trying to have a serious conversation with them. And why they just generally say everything's all right all the time. Because on a bigger scale, it probably does look all right. Financially,
maybe to stakeholders.
What they don't realise is the markets could grow. It's either the market's going to grow massively or consoles are going to go... It might become one console. I don't know what's going to happen. It become more services. And Nintendo is an own little bubble at the moment. Mm-hmm. And the marketing for the Wii U was such a disaster that I don't think people even realise it's out. You know, the people that have the Wii, they probably don't even understand it exists.
Yeah, and this is what I said when I said it hasn't become... a thing. It hasn't become a cultural phenomenon or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't become one of those things that you talk about with your family or with non-gaming friends. It hasn't become that. So that's why it's not as good.
Yeah. So the metaphor is they're like Forrest Gump, wondering about having a whale of a time, but they might fall down a mineshaft.
I think they have. I just don't think they've realised it.
Possibly.
They're just down at the bottom singing songs, having a great time.
They haven't actually hit the bottom yet.
Yeah.
Still.
No, still
I mean,
falling,
one last thing about, I mean, it's not the philosophy part, but, well, maybe it is that how, when they released, like, for example, the new Mario and things like that, it nothing seemed exciting about it. I mean, if you think about Super Mario Galaxy, was a great platformer. Well, in fact, it was a great game. It was so well designed. It looked, you know, beautiful the way they made it. All the you know, the vibrant colours that Nintendo are able to use. That, you know, there's always a good argument against this kind of technical powerhouse of everything that makes everything look grey and brown. They have a weaker console and bring out a platform that just looks stunning.
Yeah.
But these new ones, they don't seem to lack that kind of spark.
I must admit, I have never quite understood the appeal of Mario Kart. It is basically the same game as it was on the SNES now, but slightly
that is
more 3D.
True.
You can't really do a huge amount with it, though? What?
You can't.
With Galaxy, obviously, you can, because it's, you know, it's so free, you can do whatever you want. But
I kind of feel like they dug themselves into a corner with the like main Mario franchise. I mean, where the hell can they go after Mario Galaxy? They've played with gravity. They had
more
it on
of
a galactic
it.
Scale.
Oh, I mean, it needs to be a 3D platformer. Like, everyone, there's so many people that love 3D platformers, but there's so few of them nowadays. And to go back to doing something that's 2.5D and not and move away from that seems a shame. I mean, obviously, it doesn't have to be the Galaxy. It could just be land or something.
I think they should reboot it. And they should have Mario as a depressed hitman in Brooklyn. And, you know,
gritty,
go a bit dark.
Realistic Mario. Yeah.
It goes around to do someone's plumbing and just shoots him in the back of the head.
Yeah.
Third person shooter. Quick time events.
That would be worth playing.
Just everything amazing about
everything bad about the last 3 years of game design in one game.
Really good moustache physics.
Mm-hmm. In fact, just get the new Tomb Raider but put Mario instead of Lara and it can be this like growth story.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, guys, anyone got any more points about the next generation of video games?
No.
Or Nintendo for that matter.
Nintendo, well, I have to leave it for now. I mean, with the new, as I said before, it's with Sony, as a kind of a wrap up, Sony have gone for the same but bigger and better with the key kind of core philosophy of everything has to be simple. It has to be simple for the person using the machine. It has to be simple, the controller. It has to be simple for the developers to use it. Even like the where they got the share button. I mean, it's, apparently that came from one of the developer teams saying it'd be a good idea, but it fits into this simple. You don't have to go into a menu. You don't have to go back out. You press a button, a little thing screen pops up. It's all fluid. It gets the job done. Now, Microsoft have gone for the idea of digital as the future and services as the future. The advantage this gives them, well, their advantage kind of comes from how much money they have. They're a huge global business within hardware. They have the Azure kind of structure. For all their services, for the servers, for dedicated servers. And if they, why they haven't just come out and said dedicated servers dynamically for all games and actually just put it on a PowerPoint presentation worries me, because that's what they should be doing. And if they're not doing it, it means that they're considering maybe not doing that, or that all developers won't get it, which is, I mean, they need to be selling that. They should be saying, digital's the future. We've got all these dedicated servers that could dynamically bounce up wherever for any of the games on our system. You can have the best multiplayer experiences. And we just need to point out that pretty much all games in the future are going to be multiplayer. Even single-player games are going to be multiplayer in a way. So we're going to have the best version of that. But they're not saying it. No. So at the moment, Sony's simplicity, although they have less of a powerful infrastructure, I mean, they've got like, the streaming service, but that's not even going to start really happening until next year. And then,
but you're right. Microsoft's talk of having, I think they said something like 300,000 server farms worldwide or something ridiculous like that. I mean, that's something that I don't even know if Sony has anywhere near that number. And they really haven't touted the benefits of that.
Definitely. So it's going to be a weird generation. There's clearly a panic as to what what is a console is basically, that's the big philosophical question we can kind of end on, is what is a console? Because it's not what it was.
It's a lifestyle choice.
If you look back at like what PlayStation 2, and then look what's going to happen now with the way things are moving away from gaming, just won't cut it anymore from a business perspective. And where do you, everything has to keep growing, everything has to make more money, so where can you go with these sort of things? I mean, EA have been the one pushing a lot of this stuff, microtransactions, day passes, and that has gone terribly for them. They got voted twice as the worst company in America, which is bloody stupid. But just goes to show that people
Skynet, surely. There,
but it's a question they're both clearly asking, is what is a console? And Sony's is, it plays games. That's the core of it.
I think that is the difference at the moment, yeah. Isn't it?
Sony's play games, Microsoft does everything.
Yeah, services.
Yeah. Nintendo, Mario?
But they don't give a shit. Nintendo's philosophy is, we don't give a shit.
Isn't that the name of the next console?
It should be, yeah.
We double I. Okay, then, that was a good summary of the console wars and the current position and the future position. So that's it for episode 26. If you want to let us know what you think of the next generation consoles and what they hold for the future, head on over to thunderboltgames.com and check out the forums, or alternatively, contact us on Twitter @_thunderbolt or email us at podcast@thunderboltgames.com. From me, it's goodbye. From Shane,
goodbye.
And from Nick,
see you later.